Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 379 of the podcast. And it's Tuesday, 5th of June, 2018, as I record this pretty early, as I am off to Madrid today for book research for my next arcane thriller. And I am seriously looking forward to going. I'll be going to Toledo as well. And yeah, just super excited about that. Sometimes we do the things that we always thought we would. So just to wind the clock back, like 10 years ago, when I looked at the life I wanted, it involved traveling and writing. And that's what I'll be doing this week. So I'll report back on that next week. So today I have an interview on screenwriting tips and writing diverse characters with Selena Okwoma, who was one of my tutors on the NFTS, National Film and Television School here in the UK, that I went on in February. And I did a whole podcast back then on the lessons I learned, a lot of which were from Selena. So I'm really looking forward to sharing this interview with you today. So in publishing news, just a quick one, the Verge reports on Apple's announcement about iOS 12 coming this fall, and it looks like they are putting an emphasis on books again. So iBooks will be renamed Apple Books and will feature a new Reading Now section, an updated library view to put better emphasis on content, and a new Apple bookstore. So that's really interesting. And hopefully this will mean a sort of rejuvenated Apple Books. And yeah, I mean, they certainly are dominant in lots of countries where Amazon isn't. But also, as I mean, I use Apple's devices, but I still read on the Kindle app. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how this might work, and also the integration with audiobooks, which at the moment is not there. So yeah, hopefully that will help. So on a quick personal update, obviously off traveling, but I am mainly have been focusing on finishing energy for How to Write Nonfiction, still recording lessons for the multimedia course, which will continue for the rest of June. And of course, that is evergreen. So that's available whenever you're ready to write nonfiction. That finishing energy is part of the creation process, where you have to do all the little things that finish the project so you can move on to the next thing. For example, the audiobook is marked as headed to retail on ACX. So hopefully that will be up soon. But I'm really just, you know, the finishing energy. Sometimes we don't want to do all that stuff, but it has to be done so that we can kind of say, okay, that package of work is finished, and now I can focus on this new one. Yes, so that'll be fun. In terms of useful stuff, if you would like more discussion on the current state of indie, every month I do a advanced self-publishing salon with Orna Ross from the Alliance of Independent Authors and one of my close friends. And we talk about Cockygate and the advance of APUB imprints, as well as how to build your team of professionals if you want to run a business as an author. So if you go to selfpublishingadvice.org, you will find that, or I will link to it in the show notes. So basically, yeah, we do a monthly, beginning of the month, every month, well, almost every month, we do this advanced chat. And it's I really enjoy it. I always enjoy talking to Orna. So yeah, check that out if you like. Also, hope you enjoyed the in-betweenisode extra show that came out on the podcast feed this week. It was just the replay of the Facebook Live I did, and I just wanted to share that with you in case you find it useful, because I answer lots of questions live. And if you would like some more live fun and also very useful information, come and join me and Mark Dawson. And we are doing a webinar on ads for authors, so advertising for authors, on Tuesday, 12th of June at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And as ever, if you register, you will get the replay sent to you within 24 hours after the live event. So Mark, many of you will know Mark Dawson from the SPF Self-Publishing Formula podcast, and also many of you have done his courses. But if you haven't, or if you have and you would like some live training, and of course we do, Mark does a tutorial. He's going to do a tutorial on how to use Facebook ads. And we will be talking also about the GDPR, the impact of list building with the new email guidelines. And we will then do a live Q&A. So if you have joined me live before, or if you've listened to the recording, it is a fun and informative time. Also, I should say that many of you hopefully will, if you're on my email list, you will have seen my Facebook ads for how to write nonfiction. I did some static ads with pictures and also video ads. So hopefully you will have seen those, and I definitely still use Facebook ads for my book promotion around launch, and also at sporadic times whenever I do a relaunch. So for example, I am doing some on my London crime thriller box set, which has a book bub coming up. So I'll be doing some Facebook ads around that. So definitely it's still a core part of my book marketing. And Mark will do the presentation and then we'll do the Q&A. You can sign up at thecreativepen.com/June12, J-U-N-E-1-2. So thecreativepen.com/June12. And that will be on Tuesday, 12th of June. So that will be fun. So thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments on the show this week. Lorraine Alvarez Posen says, listen to one of your podcasts for the first time the other day, then got addicted and listened to more while working on and finishing this whale illustration, which she sent, and it's gorgeous. And writing this from Cape Town, South Africa. Wonderful. A place I have not visited. So definitely on my list. Lisa M. Lilly, listening to the show on Superfans while tackling paperwork that's been stacking up as I recover from a broken foot. Now in an air cast, have a little more energy. So sorry you're still not recovered, Lisa, so get better soon. Megan Martin says, I have an Etsy shop and I sell candles and soap. I listen while stocking, packaging and shipping. It gets me inspired to work on my novels at the end of the day. Wow, that's awesome, Megan. And with that name, you'd be very popular in Britain right now. After the lovely royal wedding, there will be a crop of Megans born this year, that's for sure. Anna Gabriela Villena says, hello, I'm a Brazilian starting YA author and also a translator. I love your podcast. Fantastic. And just a couple more. Lydia Sanders said, celebrating the long days with early morning walks in the park while I listen to the backlog. Sent a beautiful early morning sunny picture. And Mary A. Schaefer, catching up on a backlog while remodeling my travel trailer in preparation for full-time living on the road. So that is fascinating stuff. Right, so today's show is sponsored once again by How to Write Nonfiction, Turn Your Knowledge into Words. So do you want to write nonfiction? Do you want a step-by-step guide through the mindset, business aspects, writing and editing, publishing and product creation, as well as marketing a nonfiction book? If you do, then check out How to Write Nonfiction, out now in ebook, print, large print, workbook, and coming soon in audio. Hopefully by the time this goes out, the audiobook will be around. I also have a multimedia course, How to Write a Nonfiction Book, which expands on the material. And you can get $50 off by using the coupon code LAUNCH, valid until 30th of June 2018. So you can find those links at thecreativepen.com/books. You'll find all the links to all my books there, and also thecreativepen.com/courses, where you'll find all my courses as well. So thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Thanks to everyone who's been sending support for years now and months now. And also thanks to this week, Julie Pickerill, for upping her pledge. And to everyone supporting the show, I really do appreciate the Patreon support. Seriously, it's becoming more and more important to me. And like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And on Patreon, you can support the show with a couple of dollars and you'll get an extra monthly Q&A audio, which I will get into for June pretty soon. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, let's get on with the interview. Today, I'm here with Selina Okwuoma. Hi, Selina.
Hi, Joanna. Nice to see you.
It's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Selina is a freelance script consultant who has worked on multiple award-winning and award-nominated scripts. She works with the Berlinale Talents Programme, consults in sub-Saharan Africa, and teaches at the UK's National Film and Television School, NFTS. And I was on one of Selina's brilliant classes this year. It was fantastic. Now, Selina, I get to actually find out more about you. So tell us, how did you get into writing and script consulting? A bit of a potted history.
Well, I think it goes really all the way back to childhood and sort of the importance of stories. And stories have always been really important to me. I think particularly with a family that sort of comes from all over, the stories we tell ourselves as families are incredibly important to us. But as someone with a family that's spread all over, I think it takes on an extra dimension. And so I think really that's where my interest in stories or the importance of stories to me comes from. So having lost sight of that a bit as a teenager, it took me a while to find my way back to it. But I did always find lifelines in stories as you know, throughout, and I did find my way back and did postgraduate studies in professional writing, some in screenwriting, and then worked first for a literary agency. So that was kind of my way in.
Yeah, and just tell us a bit more about that, because you then went from the literary agency and now you work all over the place. So tell us a bit more about what you do now, because it is cool. Okay.
Well, at the literary agency, I was there when they were setting up their production arm. So, in fact, right from the start, I was working in the development of projects. I mean, agents do anyway, but I was specifically there to work as a development executive and be trained up. So that's what I did. I was trained up as a development executive, and I moved on after that to work for Eon Screenwriters Workshop, which was also as a development executive, and gained experience working on a lot of different projects there, particularly at the literary agency with adaptations. And so with that experience, it had always been important to me to work with diverse voices, and I was invited to work at the Berlinale Talents, so part of the Berlin Film Festival, and that's where I began to sort of make my connections with people outside the UK. Mm. And it really, my work has sort of spread by word of mouth, so I've gotten to work with more and more different places. I know you particularly highlighted work with sub-Saharan Africa, but actually my work in Africa is the whole of Africa, North Africa too, and Middle East. But also I work beyond. Like last year, for example, I worked on two programs in Central America and the Caribbean, so 20 odd projects from that region. So really, I'm lucky enough to be sort of invited into stories from all over the world. And I think that my particular background, being quite international and having a sort of different perspective on things, has facilitated that.
Mm. And we're going to return to the international side. But first of all, one of the interesting things, people think of the golden age of television, but at the workshop, there was talk of the platinum age of visual storytelling, like, you know, one better, the platinum age. So what is exciting you right now in terms of the possibilities for storytellers in this new market and new political landscape, I guess?
Well, for me, I think probably the most exciting thing is accessibility. Mm. I think that, you know, the the ability to get your hands on an iPhone or whatever and film for yourself and actually make your own work and get it out there is more than it ever has been before. It is not a world of completely equal opportunities, but nevertheless, you know, it's really exciting that that's happening. And for me, that is the most exciting thing.
And didn't someone just make a full length film with an iPhone, like one of the directors?
Yes, there have been full length films with iPhones. I'm trying now to
Yeah, I can't remember either, but it was somebody who was quite well known, and it was like, oh my goodness, you can make a film with an iPhone that goes on a big screen. Like the quality is
Tangerine was made with an iPhone, wasn't it?
Yeah, maybe. I can't remember which one. But let's then sort of talk a bit, because many people now think, oh, Netflix and Amazon are the big guns. But, you know, we're in the UK and you've just talked about all these international possibilities. Sure. So are these big American giants crushing it, or are you seeing a very lively, independent, international sort of scene on the other side?
Well, again, from my point of view, it might look slightly different to some of the things you've heard, this fear of the threat to cinema from Netflix and Amazon. Because from my point of view, when I know that certain projects which have struggled to be made through the old model, as it were, of filmmaking and have managed to be made with funding from Netflix and open up a dialogue with a different storyteller, then I can't be critical on that front. So in specific terms, I know that Beasts of No Nation was struggling to find a platform until Netflix funded it, and I think it's a great film. Netflix is making local content in these places, so it is offering a platform for people. I know that in India there's been a number of projects that have been commissioned, for example. So I might be naive, but I hope that, you know, that's a good sign. And as for the threat to cinema, we have to see what's happening to cinema in the context of Netflix. We don't know what's going to happen. I think that when old regimes are falling, there is always a sense of fear and threat, but it may not be necessary. I hope that theatrical cinema survives. I love the experience of going to the cinema. I think it's a very different experience to watching something on a small screen. But we shall see what happens.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like you say, the traditional markets. I mean, we've just seen with Cannes kind of saying, well, Netflix films can't go into the Cannes Film Festival because they're not shown in cinemas. And then I read a report that Netflix might buy some cinemas in order to show some. So there's always ways around these rules, right?
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that if there's enough appetite for something, I don't see why it wouldn't be shown at the cinema. I know that sort of earlier on in the days of the internet, people grew their audience online, and then things transferred to the cinema because they had an audience. Things that wouldn't have ever gone to the cinema if it weren't for the internet platforms. I don't see why, if something is, you know, if there's an appetite for something, it couldn't work that way around. But it is about us all learning to work with new models and finding a way, really.
Yeah. I was also interested when we were talking in the class that it's not that you need necessarily these big projects to fund things, but actually there's lots of money for funding in local markets. So, for example, we had someone who might be able to go to Israel for their funding, or I've got a project for potentially Hungary that could look at that. So is that another angle on things that independent, script writers, filmmakers can be looking in these other markets directly?
Sure, it is absolutely a way of getting things made. I'm a huge fan of co-production. I work with a lot of co-productions, and this is how independent cinema gets made. I think we're a little bit short-sighted in the UK often on that front. But it is, you know, it's necessary, but it's also an amazing experience. It's on one of the programs I work for, which is the Film Prize of the Robert Bosch Stiftung. It's set up as a co-production prize, and the intent is to foster international cooperation. But it does that through a film prize where people from Germany, in this case Germany and the Arab world, co-produce, and that experience does, as I say, foster international cooperation. So it's you know, it's really is, it's an important thing in the world. It's not just about the product, it's about the experience. And I think it's a really special experience for people to do that, and it does offer different opportunities. Different countries have different funding available, they have a different, cinema has a different priority in different places, so you know, particularly sort of with art house cinema, that's the sort of way it's typically funded.
No, it's fascinating. There are so many opportunities that I wasn't aware of before I came on the course. Now, I want to come back to the time when you were at the agency and one of your jobs was reading scripts from the slush pile, which is brilliant. So I wanted to know, what are some of the hallmarks of a really bad script that might make you stop reading?
Well, one thing I want to say before I talk about the bad script is about the slush, so-called slush pile, because I was really interested that you call it the slush pile, because in my whole time working there and in my brain, I don't think of it as a slush pile. And I think that's quite important. It was called Unsols, Unsolicited. And I think that's actually really important because it's really exciting to find new talent. It's not, so whilst I'm not going to pretend you don't have, you know, days where it's like, oh God, I've got to go through this huge stack of material. But at the same time, you know, it is exciting to find that new talent. I did find interesting things in that stack. that's an important thing to bear in mind before I'm answering the question about bad script. On that front, bad script, you can often spot them immediately. It is big no-no to have a picture on the front, because writers are meant to communicate in words. So often if there's a picture on the front, it's a sign that the writer doesn't trust their words. So there's a sense of foreboding as you open a script with a picture on the front. So that's the first impression. Then secondly, there's the formatting. It's a really basic thing to say, but the formatting is really important, because as soon as you open a script, if you can see that that it's not correctly formatted, in that there's not enough white space, it's actually really quite dense chunks of text, it's difficult to penetrate. So you're actually putting up a barrier to people actually being able to see your story. So that's very important. You can also see from that whether there's the correct balance of a correct, that's a really nasty word in itself, but whether there seems to be a balance of dialogue and action, or whether it seems to be. And you do have to still read, because there are always exceptions, whether it seems to be too dialogue heavy or the other way around. So there are certain things that you get a feel for immediately just by looking at it without actually even reading. But then when you go on to read, It's about visual storytelling. I think that's something that from reading scripts, and there are a huge number of scripts available online, but by reading scripts, you can start to gain a sense of how to tell a story visually. It's a very different discipline to writing novelistically, which is what we are most used to. So that's what it's about. If all of that sort of comes together, the sign of a really good script, so I'm going to flip your question, is that it is quick and easy to read. That means that it's flowing, the rhythm, the pace. That's really what you're looking for, that easy read with dramatic storytelling. That's the other thing I didn't say, visual storytelling, but also dramatic storytelling, which is quite different again to novelistic writing. Little giveaways of people writing sort of internal things that you can't see.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And that's why, you know, I came to adapt Map of Shadows to a script, Map Walker. And it was so interesting to kind of, even though I thought I had cut down these big chunks of description or whatever, like immediately, like you could tell and other people could tell, and I could tell eventually that they were just too long. They were just too wordy. So what are some of the other issues when you've seen authors adapting either their own work or other people's work when they start with the long form? Because of course scripts are so short. I mean, like you say, a fast read, you can get through a script in like an hour, right? I mean, it's really fast.
Well, some people can. But yeah, it's interesting with adaptation, because it is a leap of faith. It's an adaptation, but they are not the same thing. So I'm not explaining myself well. Basically, what you're doing when you're adapting is you are trying to stay true to the spirit of the story. But even that can be different things to different people. So one of the things that takes place in the process of an adaptation is if you have a producer who is looking to adapt a project, they will be speaking to a number of writers to find out if the writers have the same take on the project as they do themselves. Because obviously you see different things in a story. So what is it that they want out of their adaptation? And then they will try and match a writer for that and take it on that course. Once that part of it's done, then there's all kinds of craft elements of it, of adapting that come into play. One of the things, I mean, I've already commented when I was talking about the sort of finding new talent, is that you have to write dramatically. You would think that, okay, now we're working on the same story, it should be quite sort of obvious what we're going to get out of it. But you can't, there are many things in a novel that you cannot do in a script and vice versa. So you need to be free to invent things that achieve the same purpose in the dramatic adaptation. David Hare came in to speak on one of our courses, and he put it as, you have to be lavishly promiscuous in order to be faithful. I think that's really the way to look at it. You do have to be free to invent, but stay true to the spirit of that story. It sounds very nebulous. What does that mean? But I think that you can only find out by trying to do it yourself. And you'll see that some things just don't work in a scene. And you have to try and work out, how can I put across through the subtext of what they're saying in this scene, through the creation of an event, through perhaps conflating a couple of characters, because a novel can have so many more characters and can go off on tangents and be so much more circuitous than an adaptation. So, you know, all of those things are things that you might do. And what's really funny is when it's done right, people think that the event was in the original story when it wasn't necessarily.
Well,
because it rings true to them.
Yeah, and it's so funny because, of course, I was doing the adaptation of Matt Walker and I had to change things, and now I can't remember what's in the script and what's in the novel. So when I write the next one, I'm going to have to read the novel and, like, be true to that rather than the script. As you say, it becomes quite...
But maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you need to be true to the story that's coming from the script.
Coming from the script. And in fact, I think I went through that process and then realised that I could have made the story stronger, because I think the script makes you get down to that skeleton, doesn't it? Mm. So have you seen that? Because, I mean, you obviously read a lot, you know, a very well-read literary person as well. Do you think that writers who are also screenwriters do write maybe more commercial books or more accessible books, or, you know, have somehow incorporated those skills?
I think there are very few people who are good at writing both. And I'm quite impressed by those who can switch between the two mediums. But I think the reason for writing different forms is in itself interesting, because I think that as a writer, certain ideas are more suited to a novel and others are more suited to the screen. So for those who write both, I think that's one of the things that's going through their minds, perhaps. I mean, there are also some very commercial reasons to think about writing one thing first. For example, it's more difficult to mount a screen story as an original story. Some people want to write the novel to grow an audience, like I've just been saying about the internet. But they write the novel to grow the audience so that then they can take it to the screen. So, you know, you could be making very practical considerations, but I think that ultimately there are some stories that just present themselves as a story that is more novelistic in nature, and some of the screen stories. So I don't know if I've answered your question at the end of all that.
It's an interesting thought. And I know a lot of people listening, you know, we are all authors first on this podcast, but many of the listeners are also screenwriters or trying their hand or interested in it. And so I think that's really great. Another thing, like you mentioned the practical realities. And one of the things that I came out of your class was the realization that my script would be a very big budget. And when we did the pitching, I mean, I realized it, you realized it. When I pitched it, she was like, yeah, that's big, really big budget. So, and of course, that doesn't mean it won't get made, but it's kind of very unlikely because I'm not famous. But what are some of the other, like that, those practicalities, do you think authors should even consider those practicalities at the writing stage or later? Or what are your thoughts on that?
I think there's a reason I work in development, and it is partly because I'm a dreamer, but also I think that it's counterproductive to tell somebody who's starting out in screenwriting to limit themselves by practicalities, because I think the biggest challenge is finding your voice as a screenwriter. So in the first instance, I would say, don't think about it. I think that you need to find that style and that voice, and that if you write something in which you do that, then you have a calling card script. It may never get made, but it can get you noticed. Mm. And that is just as important. Well, it's the first hurdle. So it gets you over that first hurdle. At that point, okay, maybe then you want to start thinking about those practicalities, and really you want to make something low budget. There are some great low budget things out there which were made as first films. One of the ones I think I showed you in the class was Once, a musical, which spawned the sort of theatre show as well, and has grossed huge amounts, but it was made for very little in the first instance. It's a small scale story, but it's no less appealing for that. And I think that those are the sorts of things that you can think about at that stage. But if it's not your kind of storytelling, it's not helpful. If you're, you know, if you are a big storyteller, then you have to tell a big story, you know. So, yeah. And I also don't think it's impossible to sort of find your way through doing that. There are different ways there. I think recently, quite famously, Liz Hannah, who wrote The Post, that was her first script. And, you know, she got Steven Spielberg directing it, Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks acting in it, you know.
Pretty good. no, that's awesome. And another thing that we talked about particularly, because we both have these international families, was, and again, the political situation we're in, is writing diverse characters. And, you know, I was asking you all these questions because I was so determined, because my book already is kind of multicultural, but I wanted to make it clear, because we've seen calls from actors to make sure that the casting is representative, that type of thing. So what are some of your tips for making sure that our scripts are, you know, include diversity that reflects the world of the story?
Well, I think it's about honesty I think that if we look honestly at the world around us and reflect that in our stories, so reflect our truth, and I don't say that our as a minority, I say the our as a human being. I think that a lot of us who are writing scripts live in urban cosmopolitan centres. Most of those across the world are diverse. So I don't understand why then you would write something that isn't. I think that people are very, again, there's fear here. People are shying away from a potential controversy, and so they're not sure about writing characters that are other. But I think there is the kind of key. Why are they other? they don't have to be, you know. And you know, there are degrees to that as well. I mean, if you're writing something where, you know, somebody goes to a hospital in the UK, in the NHS, you know, it's the person you're likely to meet. There's so many different diverse characters there. Surely it's very straightforward to write that into your work. You're not being asked to make any great leaps of imagination there, but I challenge you to make those leaps of imagination as well, because you know, it's about human emotion and the truth of that. I also think that in screenwriting you are given, you have at your disposal, because it is a collaborative medium, you can find people from different groups, whoever you're representing, to work with, so that it's not just your point of view. You have, you know, you do your research, you get your feedback, you make sure that you are writing a character that is, you know, that is true. And that's, I think that's something that's special to screenwriting, that you can do that.
I really like that. And of course, you know, practically when we were talking about it, you know, even just using a name that might be used in a, you know, in a particular culture will help the casting of that character. Like, you don't need to be going overboard in describing them. You know, you can just use a name or a little character tag or something. And I think this is the main point I got out of it was, It's really important that we include it, but we don't need to like go all heavy-handed about making it really clear in the text. Like, people are intelligent.
True. Yes. Absolutely. And yeah. And for you particularly, I remember, you know, it was about speaking your truth. So that's what you have to do.
Fantastic. Right, well, last question. One of the things I personally love about screenwriting is that it is about generally commercial viability and that getting it out there. It doesn't need to make multi-millions, but it needs to make break even at least and pay the people involved. And whereas with novels, like, often that's not even a question, like making money just isn't there. So, and the pitching, what was interesting about the NFTS course was half of it was writing and half of it was the selling. I mean, it really was quite split, which was unusual to me in a sort of writing environment. But I wondered that one of the things I learned from you particularly was your pitching guidelines and notes session, which was brilliant. And you talked about pitching yourself as the person and the author as much as your script. So can you just maybe talk about why is it important to pitch yourself as the writer as well as the project?
Okay. Well, I think that there are different sort of emphases to that in different places. I know in particular in the States, it's even more important than it is here, but everybody wants to know about that. Firstly, as I just said, it is a collaborative medium. So you are going to have to work with people. And you have to be able to take feedback. So I think that one of the things that people are sounding out is your sort of ability to come up with workable solutions, to be able to take those notes, work with them, come back again. It can be quite a tough industry in that regard. And it can be wrong for some kinds of writers because you are constantly challenged and it depends who you work with, what form that challenge takes. So, you know, it's for those reasons, who you are as a writer is important in what. If you are the right kind of writer is important. So that's one element of it. A second element, though, is about, I think, is applies equally to the novelist and relates to what we've just been talking about in terms of diverse characters to a degree. And it's about, why are you the person to tell this story? What's your authority over the story? And so that's another thing that people are trying to sound out and through that pitch. But I think it's also important to note that it's the writer's opportunity to discover who the person they're pitching to is and whether that's the right person for them too. So it's not a pitch in one direction. It's an exchange. And I think that's really important to stress.
Yeah, you did this whole thing about the pitcher and the catcher. And the fact is, if you're throwing your stuff at someone who's not interested in catching your stuff, like, what's the point?
Yeah.
And that was, I thought that was really powerful, because so often, and it was very nerve wracking. We were all nervous in the cast pitching to this lady that came in, whatever she was, I can't remember, very important person. And we were like, whoa, and like sweating. And yet the whole point was that, you know, we were sort of trying to learn about her as well. And yeah. That's really helped me for my next pitching session. And I think that's true whether people are pitching for a traditional book deal as well, right? The same would be true.
Absolutely. You're going to be working with your editor through that, the process of getting that book ready. You need to have that rapport. You need to be able to sort of believe in them and feel supported, and think that they get you. All of those things are really, really important. So yeah, for me, pitching is, you know, all learning about pitching should be empowering, because I think also there's the misconception that, you know, you're meant to go in there and be this performer. You're not an actor. You don't have to perform. You don't have to be super confident. You know, it's you. What you do need is belief in and passion for your story. That needs to come across, but that can come across even if you're not confident. it's quite interesting, and people, and how people react to different writers and different stars, like writers who I've seen in public pitches, writers who are nervous and you can see their vulnerability, but people respond to that. It's very interesting.
Fascinating. Now, the course was amazing, and I wonder if you would just tell people listening, if they're interested, about the NFTS, because I know you're a private person, but you do teaching at these various events. So just tell us where people can find the NFTS online, and a bit about the course you teach there.
Sure. Well, I teach the short course in script writing, which is a 6-day course from a Wednesday to a Wednesday, and I do that 3 times a year. So you can just look up the NFTS, literally Google those letters, and you will find that and look in the short courses list. But I also work at a number of other places as well, where I can be found. So there are things like the Berlinale Talents that you mentioned already, but other festivals from time to time, and it really does depend. I work at Talent Sarajevo as well, for example. So those are the sorts of things that you can apply for. I think people are perhaps not as aware as they could be that there are development programs at various festivals which they can apply to. Of particular interest, those two are actually probably for people who are already on their way as a screenwriter, so they have credits under their belt. But there are also strands within them which are for short filmmakers, for example. I've worked at short film festivals, and there are, again, a number where people can go to get their short film scripts developed and then pitch them and potentially get funding or support in kind. All of these things are things to look out for, and I think that as if you're really interested, and if you get online, you can find information about all these things. If I name just a few of those short film festivals, it would be remiss of me not to mention Encounters Short Film Festival in Bristol, seeing as that's where I am, and that there's also Interfilm Berlin and Go Shorts in the Netherlands, Clermont-Ferrand in France, all of which I've worked at different times, and all of which there've been development programs or pitching training for short filmmakers. So I think those are the sorts of things that actually start to get you into the mindset of filmmaking, TV is slightly different, but given those platforms and all the things we've been saying about sort of the changes that are happening in the industry, TV is being included at film festivals now too. Mm. So, you know, get out there, start to sort of get the lay of the land, and I think that's the best way to start finding your way forward.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Selena. That was great.
Thank you.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Selena today. Her tips on how to make your screenplay stand out in the slush pile are particularly useful for those of us just getting started. And next week, I'm talking about strategy and business plans for authors with Johanna Rothman, who is quite a character. So it is more entertaining than it says on the tin. If you're not interested in strategy and business plans, you might still enjoy the interview with Johanna. We do have a laugh. So look forward to that next week. And one more time, How to Write Nonfiction is out now in all the usual formats, in all the usual places. And also, if you want to come along to the Facebook ads webinar with me and Mark Dawson, go to thecreativepen.com/June12, June12. Right, happy writing, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.